Chapter 26 A Clinical Sleight of Hand. While humanity was fearfully waiting in a state of lockdown to be saved by a vaccine, few were aware that, long before the COVID-19 pandemic, preparations had already been made for U.S.-led global immunization program. The 2005 PREP Act had laid the groundwork for the Secretary of Health and Human Services to trigger a national response akin to mobilization for war. Vaccines were deemed the equivalent of military countermeasures with liability shields and immense government funding, and their manufacturers were presumably salivating at the prospect of receiving a liability-free government contract. The U.S. vaccine marketplace was already a $75 billion annual industry, providing revenue streams to around 30 companies. A COVID-19 vaccine contract would likely result in a windfall profit of tens of billions in the first year of distribution. Moderna enjoyed U.S. government agency, DARPA, NIAID, and BARDA support, while BioNTech, founded in 2008 in Mainz, Germany, partnered with Pfizer to produce its version of the mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. Also known as BNT162b2, the Pfizer-BioNTech shot also used messenger RNA to induce the recipient's body to produce the coronavirus's spike protein. This protein had been engineered in the Wuhan Institute of Virology in a joint U.S.-Chinese collaboration. Pfizer conducted a single, large, phase 2/3 clinical trial among individuals who had not contracted SARS-CoV-2, excluding women of childbearing potential. The primary endpoint was symptomatic COVID-19 infection beginning 7 days after the second vaccine dose. This trial began on July 27, 2020, and completed enrollment of 46,331 participants in January 2021. On November 18, Pfizer-BioNTech announced that, after conducting the primary efficacy analysis, their mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccine met all the study's primary efficacy endpoints. On December 2, 2020, the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA, in the UK authorized the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for emergency use, the first such authorization. Shortly thereafter, on December 11, 2020, the US FDA authorized the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine for emergency use. Newsreels showed trucks leaving company headquarters with life-saving vaccine vials packed in dry ice, and people standing on the side of the road and cheering. These jubilant spectators were unaware that the approval process had been marred by deep and obvious flaws that allowed the company to make shortcuts to declare the vaccine a success. Just a few months later, attentive observers recognized that this injection of genetic material intended to induce immunity to SARS-CoV-2 was a dangerous failure. The clinical trial did not count and analyze all events from the time of randomization. Failure to do so flouted the standard method used in randomized controlled trials, known as intention to treat. Instead, Pfizer, with the blessing of the FDA and Operation Warp Speed, did not count SARS-CoV-2 illness until 7 days after the second injection of 30 micrograms mRNA. This discounted many COVID-19 cases in the Pfizer group immediately after the first and second shots. Moderna did not count symptomatic illness until 2 weeks after the second dose. Because the injections caused detectable reactions while the placebo did not, many subjects were not blinded. That is, they had a means of knowing they had received the vaccine. Those who received the vaccine and knew it assumed they were protected from COVID-19, which they'd heard from media reporting to be an invariably dreadful disease. Thus, many of the vaccinated who did contract COVID with only mild illness were not inclined to report it. The trial should have done weekly PCR testing on all subjects to ascertain the true prospective cohort rate of positive SARS-CoV-2 testing. Likewise, for each positive case in a subject's household, all members should have been tested to see if the vaccine indeed blocked transmission. By design, the BNT162b2 shot would induce the recipient's cells to produce spike protein. However, because the body produced this spike in uncontrolled quantities for an uncontrolled duration, weekly levels should have been measured in the blood. At the very least, blood should have been drawn and saved for future analysis of spike protein pharmacokinetics. Additionally, laboratory tests should have been frequently performed with basic safety parameters for liver, kidney, and heart injury. The vaccine trial had the wrong primary endpoint. Developing a mild case of the sniffles equivalent to a head cold was not clinically meaningful. Over the pandemic, 97% of Americans, vaccinated or not, contracted SARS-CoV-2 at least once. The proper endpoint should have been adjudicated COVID-19 hospitalization and death. Pfizer had selected a well-insulated, healthy population in which approximately 1% contracted COVID-19 during the trial period. While positive test rates in many parts of the country were as high as 15%. In November 2020, Pfizer announced favorable trial results. Trial participants were unblinded by week 20, and placebo volunteers were invited to receive the modified mRNA injections. Pfizer's announcement of the efficacy of its modified mRNA product was based on 162 out of 22,000 placebo recipients contracting COVID-19, compared to only 8 out of 22,000 vaccine recipients. None of the 162 placebo recipients who contracted COVID-19 died from the disease. The numbers of cases were too small to justify general conclusions with regard to COVID-19 morbidity and mortality. By declaring victory in November and quickly issuing a FDA briefing booklet, Pfizer and the FDA obscured the fact that the trial was still ongoing and that vaccine deaths were occurring. Furthermore, since only 2 months of data were compiled after the primary series, it was impossible to know how long protection would last. By April 15, 2021, just 4 months into the campaign, David Kessler, chief science officer for President Biden's COVID-19 response task force, told a congressional committee meeting that boosters could be needed. This was a tacit admission the shots were failing. Corinne A. Michaels et al. Has published a forensic analysis of deaths in the trial occurring before and after the FDA briefing booklet was prepared. At the time of the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, VRBPAC, meeting, neither Pfizer nor the FDA asked if any additional deaths had occurred between the end of data collection on November 14, 2020, and the meeting on December 10, 2020. The FDA briefing booklet reported 2 deaths with BNT162b2 and 4 with placebo. The chilling reality is that Pfizer and VRBPAC concealed that 21 people who'd received BNT162b2 had died during the 6 months following vaccination, while only 17 with the placebo had died. If this reality had been shown in the core slides and amended briefing booklet, it should have killed approval. A presentation of detailed information about how a new FDA-authorized product performs is supposed to be published in a 90-day post-marketing surveillance report. By March 10, 2021, no Pfizer report was posted on the FDA website. With months passing and still no report published, many observers became highly concerned. Attorney Aaron Seary filed a lawsuit to compel the FDA to release the Pfizer 90-day data. Never had a pharmaceutical company and the FDA withheld safety data from the public. After months of legal wrangling, the FDA's attorney announced that the information would not be released for 55 years. However, a judge ultimately ruled in Siri's favor. 8 months later, data started to trickle forth, revealing that 1,223 deaths had occurred shortly after vaccination with BNT162b2. Historically, companies have voluntarily withdrawn a product that caused between 5 and 15 deaths during this 90-day period, or the FDA has ordered the company to remove it. In 1976, the swine flu vaccine was removed from the market after 25 deaths and a few hundred cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome were reported. In the case of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, to this day, there has been no safety review of these deaths, their causes, or discussion of how to make the vaccine safer. More than a dozen studies have reported all-cause mortality climbing since the rollout of the vaccines. On August 23, 2021, a mere 13 months after the trial began, BNT162b2 became the first FDA-approved, as distinct from emergency use authorized, COVID-19 vaccine. However, the product's life on the market was brief. Because the new Omicron variant had supplanted the original wild type, as well as the Alpha and the Delta strains, the approved original formula was soon pulled from the market. This wasn't surprising. Virologists have long understood that RNA viruses like corona and influenza rapidly mutate, enabling them to escape antibodies induced by previous strains. This is why a new flu shot, usually offering poor coverage, is rolled out every season. Because of this predictable outcome, the FDA-approved shot was deemed ineffective against Omicron and replaced by Omicron EUA boosters that skipped human studies. Instead, they were tested only on laboratory rodents before they were released to the public. Multiple studies have demonstrated their negative efficacy, meaning these boosters make it more likely that the recipient will repeatedly contract COVID-19. Moderna, Janssen, and Novavax conducted similar trials to Pfizer's and filed for EUA approval with the FDA. None of their 90-day post-marketing dossiers have been published. Janssen did not produce boosters for mutant spike proteins and withdrew their original product from the market. On August 1, 2022, thoughtful and attentive cardiologists were stunned by the publication of a report that two teenage boys had died within the first week after receiving the second Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 dose. Autopsies confirmed that both had died of vaccine-induced myocarditis. Based on these deaths, the FDA should have, at the very least, directed Pfizer to issue a myocarditis warning, especially for adolescent males, in its package insert. In multiple public statements, including testimony to a December 7, 2022 Senate hearing, Dr. Peter McCullough cited these deaths and countless others as grounds for removing COVID-19 vaccines from the market. As of April 25, 2025, 19,403 American deaths have been reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, mostly by healthcare professionals who believe these deaths are vaccine-related. Approximately 1,134 deaths on the day of vaccination have been reported, and 1,266 on the day after vaccination. A study published in 2010 by principal investigator Lazarus Ross, MBBS, MPH, for Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Incorporated, found that fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported to VAERS. Using the far more conservative estimate of 3.3%, or a 1 in 30 underreporting factor, 19,403 yields a nationwide estimate of 582,090 U.S. vaccine deaths. The largest autopsy study published to date indicates that 73.9% of deaths after vaccination are a direct cause or significantly contributed to by COVID-19 vaccination. There are now more than 4,000 peer-reviewed manuscripts in the medical literature concerning fatal and non-fatal COVID-19 vaccine injuries, including those recognized by regulatory agencies around the world. These include myocarditis, neurologic injury, thrombosis, and immunologic syndromes. Especially terrifying are the increasing indications that the COVID-19 vaccines are contributing to widespread and devastating neurological conditions that resemble Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease, which could eventually place a crushing burden on the national healthcare and financial systems. On March 27, 2025, renowned cancer immunologist Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong gave an interview with Tucker Carlson in which he expressed his grave fear that the COVID-19 vaccines had impaired the body's immune system to fight cancer. He is merely the latest oncology scholar to express such concerns. Thus, the greatest experiment ever conducted on humanity is revealing itself to be the greatest biopharmaceutical disaster in history.